Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Hey folks, this is Mike with Battles of the First World War podcast. Joining us today is Dr. Chad Williams, here to discuss his latest work of history titled The Wounded World, W.E.B. Du Bois and the First World War. This is an engrossing work on Du Bois, World War I, and the African-American experience in the Great War. It weaves the events of America's participation in World War I, the tense state of race relations back in the U.S., and the life and writings of Du Bois into a masterfully written history of a time period quickly fading into the distant past. I can't wait to get into it. But first, a quick introduction of Dr. Williams, borrowed directly from his website. Dr. Chad Williams is the Samuel J. and Augusta Spector Professor of History and African and American Studies at Brandeis University. Chad earned a BA with honors in history and African American studies from UCLA and received both his master's and PhD in history from Princeton University. He specializes in African American and modern United States history, African American military history, the World War I era, and African American intellectual history. His first book, Torchbearers of Democracy, African American Soldiers in the World War I Era, was published in 2010 by the University of North Carolina Press. Widely praised as a landmark study, Torchbearers of Democracy won the 2011 Liberty Legacy Foundation Award from the Organization of American Historians, the 2011 Distinguished Book Award from the Society for Military History, and designation as a 2011 Choice Outstanding Academic Title. He is co-editor of Charleston Syllabus, Readings on Race, Racism, and Racial Violence, University of Georgia Press, 2016, and Major Problems in African American History, second edition, Cengage Learning, 2016. Chad has published articles and book reviews in numerous leading journals and collections. He has earned fellowships from the Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study at Harvard University, the American Council of Learned Societies, the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, the Ford Foundation, and the Woodrow Wilson Foundation. Dr. Williams, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your afternoon to discuss your latest book.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be on.
So, Dr. Williams, The Wounded World is now your second book on the African-American experience in World War I. So, this being a World War I podcast, how and when did your interest in the Great War begin?
My interest in World War I began in graduate school. I remember very vividly studying for my comprehensive exams and engaging with various books on the history of World War I, and really seeing that very little had been written about African Americans, and particularly the Black military experience in the war. And I wanted to try and fill that gap. It made for a great dissertation topic, which became my first book, Torchbearers of Democracy. And it was really out of my dissertation work, my dissertation research, that I began to be interested in W.B. Du Bois and his decades-long investment, both writing about and reckoning with the history of World War One.
And I think you've kind of already begun here, but like the inspiration for this book, I know like the book itself, The Wounded World, is again, it's Du Bois reckoning with that editorial and his support for the war, and then, you know, the fallout afterwards and the decades of race relations in the U.S. afterwards as well. So can you speak just a little more about like your inspiration to really tackle this story?
Yeah, well, as I said, it really began during my dissertation research in October of 2000. I was doing research at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where the majority of Du Bois's papers are archived. And I had seen a reference to Du Bois' World War One materials in the finding aid and didn't know what it was, but was certainly curious. I go to the library, ask to see this collection, and the librarian returns with six microfilm reels. And I'm completely confused and deeply intrigued at this point. So I load the microfilm and I discover a manuscript, an unfinished and unpublished manuscript by W.B. Du Bois on the Black experience in the First World War that he titled The Black Man and the Wounded World. The manuscript's over 800 pages long. In addition to his manuscript, all of Du Bois's research materials and his correspondence related to this project were included in this collection. So I was immediately fascinated, overwhelmed, confused about why no other historian had ever written about this before, why this was the first time of me learning about it. And really from that moment, I knew that there was a much larger story to tell about Du Bois, about this book, which would have been one of his most significant works of history and arguably the definitive history on the Black experience in the war. But also what we can learn about Du Bois himself, his thought, his political evolution, and the broader struggle for Black freedom and democracy in the 20th century.
Yeah, he was quite a complex person. I guess like we all are, but really amazing to find out who the man was through your book and retelling of the story. One thing that stuck out with me, so like before we started recording, like I mentioned, I read the Souls of Black Folk as part of preparing for this. And in it, Du Bois wrote of this sense of quote unquote this two-ness. And in his book, he wrote the following: "It is a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, this sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity. One ever feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro, two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body, whose dogged strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder." Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about Du Bois's life and his mission and how he dealt with this sense of double consciousness, sir?
Du Bois is truly one of the most remarkable individuals in American history. He is, without question, the most significant Black intellectual, Black scholar, activist in African-American history. He lived just a truly remarkable life. He was born in 1868 during Reconstruction, the presidency of Andrew Johnson, and he dies in August of 1963, literally the day before the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, one of the high points of the modern civil rights movement. So he lived just an incredible life, really spanning much of the 20th century. He was really unparalleled in terms of his intellectual contributions. He authored 22 single authored books, not to mention hundreds of articles and essays and editorials. He was just truly prolific and really at the forefront of every major issue facing Black people, both in the United States and throughout the broader African diaspora. And part of his life calling, part of his mission, was to try and bring meaning to what it meant to be Black in the United States and in the world. And he really encapsulates this in his classic 1903 book, The Souls of Black Folk, where he identifies the problem of the 20th century as the problem of the color line, incredibly prophetic, and his famous formulation of double consciousness, this conflicted state of Black identity, of being Black on the one hand and being American on the other, and the desire to try and reconcile those two warring ideals, as you read. And he viewed the First World War as an opportunity to do just that, as an opportunity for Black people to demonstrate their Americanness and to indeed reconcile the double consciousness that he wrote about in The Souls of Black Folk and that he himself tried to reckon with in his own life, and especially during his participation in the American war effort.
So he, so I had here for my question. So he saw this double consciousness when the U.S. entered World War One, and you mentioned that, you know, this he saw this as an opportunity to reconcile that double consciousness. And we'll talk a little bit more in just a couple of minutes about the Close Ranks editorial. I just wanted to talk a bit about, like, so I guess this may jump around just a little bit, but what drove Du Bois to want to write the all caps history of American Africans in the World War?
Yeah, well, it's certainly a complex story. I mean, one that I talk about in my book and chronicle kind of Du Bois's attempts to write this history along every step of the way. But the impetus for it really originated as the war was coming to a conclusion. In October of 1918, the NAACP Board of Directors essentially tasked him with writing about the experience, writing a historical account of the experiences of African-Americans in the war. And he immediately leapt at the opportunity. He recognized that this was a unique kind of scholarly opportunity, but more importantly, especially given the contentious issues that he had to deal with during the war, the most explosive being Close Ranks, he viewed this as an opportunity to make a historical contribution without question, but to also demonstrate his leadership, his stature as the unquestioned holder and chronicler of the history of the Black experience in the war. I mean, so this was a intellectual exercise by Du Bois to try and write this history, but it was also deeply personal as well.
So I guess we'll... Here's our in for Close Ranks. So I've quoted Close Ranks in one of my episodes previously, and I have to admit, like, when I quoted it, I had one understanding of it, but it wasn't until I read your book that I really understood just how controversial it was. Like, I will say I'm glad I'm not one of your students, because I probably would have, like, completely failed that assignment. Because I
<That's> okay.
I just missed the whole part of the controversy afterwards. Where, so just as a backstory to listeners, in 1918, W.E.B. Du Bois published an editorial in the NAACP publication, The Crisis, an editorial titled "Close Ranks," where the argument was African Americans should put aside their civil rights struggle for the time being and close ranks with the rest of the United States and join in the war effort in World War One, because afterwards, after taking part in the military struggle to beat Germany and defeat, you know, German militarism, the argument of African Americans truly being citizens of this country would no longer be in doubt. Like, African Americans could now say we've done our part just as much as anybody else. We are as American as anybody else, as everybody else. So this editorial was published, and it was a rather controversial reception. Like,
without question, yeah.
And how did Du Bois take this, and how did it affect his now wanting to write this history of World War One?
How did Du Bois take it? Not well. to put it lightly.
Fiery, stormy, kind of fiery fellow at times.
He was. He had a very prickly demeanor at times. He had a massive ego. He refused to admit when he was wrong. In close ranks was certainly one of those instances. Du Bois, as you said, believed that African Americans first and foremost had a duty to support their country. And close ranks was the product of his belief in that argument. There were a lot of other factors that went into writing that editorial as well. He was applying for a captain position in the Military Intelligence Division. The federal government, as a result of the Sedition Act, was beginning to clamp down on the crisis criticisms of the United States and the war effort. So he was feeling kind of a lot of pressure from a lot of different directions, which culminated in close ranks. And he was heavily criticized for it. I mean, his harshest critics accused him of being a traitor to the race, for capitulating. And for someone like Du Bois, who committed his life to fighting for Black people, to serving the race, this was really the most hurtful, most damaging charge that you can levy at him. So he really had to absorb the weight, the pain of all that criticism. And well into the latter years of his life, he was still questioning if he had made the right decision to write that editorial, but more broadly, if he had made the right decision to encourage Black people to support the war. And if he himself had made the right decisions in compromising his own anti-war principles and beliefs in bargaining that this horrific conflict would result in gains for Black people. So close ranks was really the kind of pivotal moment where Du Bois had to begin to reckon with the weight of his decisions, and ultimately the weight of his failure in supporting the war.
And Dr. Williams, you write in The Wounded World that while writing the book, Du Bois had trouble, quote, finding a clear conceptual thread. With the title, The Black Man in the Wounded World, he seemed to arrive at a moment of clarity, organized around the central theme of tragedy. The project now possessed even greater potential by reflecting both the condition and the zeitgeist of the post-World War, end quote. How was this thread like going to make writing that book difficult for Du Bois?
Right. So he initially envisions his book when he starts his research and preliminary writing in late 1918, early 1919, as being kind of a redemptionist history of demonstrating that Black people and Black soldiers specifically had made heroic contributions to the war effort, that they had helped win the war for the Allies. He was certainly going to expose the systematic racism of the United States Army from its highest levels. But ultimately, he was envisioning an argument of the war and the place of Black people in it as being a moment of revolutionary transformation and ushering in a new era of democratic rights and opportunity and self-determination for African Americans and other peoples of African descent. But as he continues to work on the book in the immediate aftermath of the war, coming back to the United States to the Red Summer of 1919, where There are lynchings, full-scale massacres taking place all over the country. The continuation of European colonialism and imperialism in Africa. He begins to realize that his initial assessment of the war as being a moment of revolutionary change simply was not the case. And by the mid-1920s, as he continues to kind of absorb, you know, one tragic reminder after another of the war's legacy, he rethinks the framing of it, and he adopts the title, The Black Man and the Wounded World. And it's really an incredibly profound title and speaks to what I think is a central question Du Bois was trying to answer, is what does it mean to live in a wounded world? What type of world did the World War create? A world that was wounded by war, by violence, by white supremacy, by empire and colonialism, by economic exploitation. By that time, he began to envision the war as a tragedy. And he had to write. He thought about writing his history kind of in that way. But that was also very difficult as well, especially considering how he supported the war. And in writing about the war as a tragedy, he would have to admit to himself that his own decisions in supporting the war were ultimately a tragic failure as well.
Right. You spoke earlier that when you were, you know, doing research at UMass out in Amherst, that you came across the manuscript as well. So I think as far it's still stored there today, but what I imagine to be the mountains of personal materials that African American veterans sent to Du Bois over the years, photographs, the manuscripts, the diaries, and everything. Like, what became of all of those materials when the book was not going to be published, and when Du Bois ultimately passes away?
Right. So mind you, when I first discovered these materials, and I hate to use the word discovered because, you know, after all, it was a microfilm edition, so somebody else knew about it.
Yeah.
But I was looking at a microfilm copy. The original materials are located at Fisk University in the John Hope and Aurelia Franklin Library and Special Collections there. And I spent countless hours combing through that archive and looking, you know, at the actual manuscript itself, all of Du Bois's materials. That collection was given to Fisk, which was Du Bois's alma mater, in 1961, before Du Bois went to Ghana with his wife, Shirley Graham Du Bois. So it's a separate collection than the main archive of Du Bois's papers at UMass Amherst. But it's a truly remarkable archive, and all of the materials that Du Bois collected over the years that Black veterans gave him with the expectations that they were going to be used in the writing and publication of his history are still located there. And the fact that Du Bois didn't return many of these materials, despite many veterans asking him to do so and being very adamant about that, as I talk about in the book, I think speaks to just how ethically complicated this archive is, and how Du Bois's actions are also very, very questionable. And, you know, that's something that I also get into in the book, how it reflected his ego, his selfishness, his elitism, but ultimately his deep sense of confusion and conflict about how to write the history of the war.
Yeah, so he was hanging on to them, like he wasn't done with them, but like the book's making no progress, but he also like can't let go. It's a bit of a struggle there.
He couldn't let go, right? And he always believed that the book at some point, some way, somehow was going to get finished. And again, that's part of the tragedy of this story that I tell, that the book never is completed. But also, many of the veterans who invested their hopes, their historical visions in Du Bois ultimately didn't have their stories told.
Wow. So I know I said like no curveballs, but I apologize. I do have one. So
no, curveballs are good.
you mentioned you know, actually holding the manuscript that, you know, Du Bois himself worked on. Like oh my goodness, like I have to ask, like how did that feel like for you? Like just you're writing a book about this person and this manuscript that Du Bois was working on, and now you're actually like holding the physical papers that he held and worked on.
I mean, it's what every historian dreams about doing, you know, being in the archives and touching those primary source documents, obviously touching them very carefully, making sure that they are not damaged, that they stay preserved. But, you know, it's one thing to look at his manuscript, you know, in microfilm form, something very different to actually look at it, you know, in person, to feel it, to touch it, to see the ways in which he was cutting and pasting over the years, to see how the pages had faded over time. It's really a remarkable glimpse into Du Bois himself and the way that he thought and worked and wrote as a historian.
Fantastic.
Not to mention all of the other materials related to it, all of the documents that veterans gave him, photographs, the rare military documents, ephemera, you know, touching the train ticket that Du Bois had when he was traveling to Paris in 1919. So it's just a really incredible archive.
Oh, that is really incredible. Like, imagine like that train ticket was in that man's pocket, you know,
exactly. Point.
So I've got our final question here, sir. So, you know, Mr. Du Bois himself mentioned this in the book, that writers are always being asked about their next project. So we'll be no different here. So I'm just going to throw this out there. Like, can we look forward to the publication of W.E.B. Du Bois's History of African Americans in the Great War, as edited by Dr. Chad Williams?
Well, I certainly hope so. That would be a wonderful project to bring to completion. It's something that I've thought about really since I first encountered Du Bois's materials. Mm-hmm. There's some issues regarding publication rights and reproductions and things of that sort, which hopefully will be sorted out. But that would definitely be a project I would be very excited to work on. I think it would be a really important contribution to our knowledge about Du Bois and our broader knowledge about the First World War.
Fantastic. And if it, so while we have that going, any other World War I related topics as well that you're thinking of, sir?
Not at the moment, but as you well know, World War I is endlessly fascinating. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's another project that materializes at some point.
Oh, that's fantastic. Those are the same two words that I use to describe World War I, endlessly fascinating. So awesome. All right. So folks, the book is The Wounded World, W.E.B. Du Bois and the First World War, out wherever books are sold. A link to the book will be provided in the episode notes. And folks, this is one you will want to read and then have on your shelf. It is an excellent, excellent read. And I do have my copy here. We will do the social media.
I got my copy here too.
Right. It's awesome. I also noticed a copy very strategically placed behind
me. Yeah, right there.
It's super awesome. That's fantastic. Thank you so much again for taking the time to come on the podcast, Dr. Williams.
All right. Thank you. This was fun. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.